Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome back to another edition of the NFL Draft Bible Pro Day Recap Show. You're in the house with your man, Aki Euro Jones, and also the HNIC of this whole NFL Draft Bible thing, who's been doing it for 10 years strong, is my man Rich Serratella. What's up, Rich?
Hey, what's going on, Aki? Glad to be here, having a lot of fun making the Pro Day circuit, you know, trip to trip. Fordham, Rutgers, Football Rob down at West Virginia. We got Stony Brook up this week, so having a lot of fun with it.
All right, man. Yeah, we've been pretty busy. The most recent one, I think the one that everybody really was anticipating, especially on the East Coast, was these Rutgers Pro Day that just happened. The whole team was in there, and as you'll see, coming up in the later weeks, we had a lot of videos that's going to be out there. We were able to sit down and talk with a couple of the players. We got to talk to some former players like Ray Rice, who I kind of trolled a little bit. we had a really interesting conversation with Anthony Davis, which unfortunately many of you will never hear. And
that one's for the lost archives.
Yeah, we'll wait till he's out of the league then to put that one up. But Rich, just give us some feedback from the Rutgers Pro Day. We were posting numbers up all over the website. Was there any numbers that you thought kind of stood out and helped a couple of the guys at Rutgers?
Well, you know, starting with a guy that started his career at Rutgers and came back for the Pro Day, winded up at Bethune-Cookman. We got a sneak peek of him a couple weeks back at the Florham Park Regional Combine, and he put up some monster numbers. 4.40, 40-inch vertical jump, 10-10 broad jump. So a non-Rutgers kid came and almost stole the show, but, you know, we'll be posting that Kasim Green interview, and, he got a lot of attention from the teams that were in attendance. I know, Mark Harrison had a little bit of a foot injury, so he did not participate in the combine, but, you know, he had a very good combine, so I think he solidified his draft stock in the middle rounds at the combine. Juwan Jameson, I think a lot of people wanted to see him run a little bit better. He came in at 4.60 and 4.64. Not quite the speed you want to see from a 5'8", 5'9" type of guy. I think the one guy that drew a lot of attention was the tight end, DC Jefferson, and we saw, the Lions positional coach run him through a pretty in-depth workout and went through a lot of different positional drills and seemed like they had a lot of one-on-one interest with DC Jefferson. So, Marvin Booker, in terms of performance, had some outstanding numbers across the board. And, Scott Vallone, another one that struggled with an injury, went through all the workouts except for the 40-yard dash. So we spoke to R.J. Dill, Steve, the middle linebacker, Beharnes, the team captain. So lots of Daron Harmon, I don't want to leave him out either. So Brandon Jones, Marcus Cooper, lots and lots of talent. Tim Wright at the Rutgers Pro Day display and very well represented with 32 NFL teams in attendance.
All right, everybody. As you know about the Pro Day special, what we like to do, we get in a few players calling in to talk about their process and preparation and how their Pro Days went. Today we're joined by our first guest. It's no other than Mr. George Wynn out of Cincinnati, who just had their Pro Day over on Wednesday. He was attending the NFL Combine, so this guy has been on a lot of people's radar so far. So, Joy, I want to welcome you to the show, and thanks for calling in.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. How are you feeling today, man? Do you feel like there's a lot of a weight lifted off your shoulders right now, or are you just in complete relaxed mode now that you have the combine out the way, your pro days out the way? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. It has been a lot of weight lifted off my shoulders now that the combine's over with the pro days. Big relief.
So walk us through the day of preparation for that day. I mean, I guess you're kind of you're already used to it now that you did your you went to the combine and everything. So kind of tell us what was different between the preparation for the combine and the preparation for the pro day. You know, was it a more relaxed atmosphere with less stressful being there? You know, just give us an idea of what was going on.
Well, it was a lot more. It was a lot less stressful. I was in an environment that I knew. Unlike the combine, I wasn't rushed. I was around a lot of my friends and family, and I kind of knew what to expect already. So it was a lot better environment, and I was ready for it.
Hey, George, it's Rick Saratella here. Welcome to the show. And you know, were you happy with the results from your pro day? Because I know overall pretty solid: 22 bench press reps, 34 and a half inch vertical jump, 9.11 broad jump. I mean, were you happy overall with your performance? And what kind of feedback have you gotten since the pro day on March 13th?
Yeah, I was very happy with my performance at Pro Day. I got a chance to make up the drills. I didn't do it at the combine, such as my 40 and my agility drills, which I struggled with a little bit because I had a hamstring injury. And I got a chance to show that I could actually run faster than a 4.75, which I ran at the combine. So I was very happy with that.
And what was the clock watches stopping you at the Pro Day? Did you get any kind of...
I've heard as high as a 4.5 and as low as a 4.4.
Okay, so yeah, definitely a lot better than what happened up in Indianapolis. And I think, you know, that's kind of what we assumed what we'd see, you know, a lot faster time. And, you know, you're right in that 5'10", 218-pound range. And a player that waited patiently for his chance, you know, someone, you know, when you go back and look at film at you, I mean, the first 3 years you had just 78 touches and then exploded last year with 243 carries. I think you had over 1,200 rushing yards, 12 touchdowns. But, you know, you had to wait patiently behind Isaiah Pede, who eventually went on to become a third-round pick. So the fact that, you know, you have a fellow former teammate at the NFL level who went through this draft process just a year ago, not to mention a cousin who played in the NFL and Derek Mason, have you sought out any of these guys for any kind of advice? And, you know, if so, what was the best piece of advice throughout the whole draft process?
Well, I kind of just took my own little path through the draft process. Down in Ignition, we had Devin McCourtney come talk to us, and he was pretty helpful in telling us what to expect and how we should go into the combine and how we should look at going to the community camp. And that was really helpful in terms for me just to hear people, like, hear them talk about how you have to be confident and basically trusting yourself and your abilities and what got you there. And that was probably one of the best pieces of advice I've got so far.
Now, as far as the training you did preparing for some of the positional drills, what was the kind of things you were looking to show them that you weren't able to show before as far as your positional drills?
I wanted to show that I can catch the ball and I can run fast. Like I said, during the combine, my hamstring was a little tight, so I didn't get a chance to participate in anything. So I wanted to show that I can run fast and catch the ball and come out of my breaks and just be an athlete.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Rich.
And no, I was just going to say, you know, just going back to this past season, you know, earning all Big East second team accolades you know, that Cincinnati Bearcats offense kind of steered away from that spread offense that we saw in years past and kind of pounded the rock a little bit more. Was that kind of like a change of philosophy in terms of the whole offensive strategy heading into the season?
A little bit. We started to find our identity more as we started to play more, and I think we found that we were more successful running the ball than we have been passing the ball in years past, and so I think we just decided to go with that. So I was pretty happy with it. The coaching staff was pretty happy with it, that we got to change it up a little bit. And our coaches were happy as well with the players, so it worked out well.
Yeah, and it worked out well. I mean, you had over, you know, five different games, over 100 yards. You shredded that Syracuse defense for $165. And, you know, I know you also participated in the Texas versus the Nation All-Star game, which puts together a great coaching staff. So take us through the week of practice down at the Texas First Nation game, and, you know, what kind of experience was that, and how did you perform in the game overall?
That was a very different experience for me. Practice was pretty much the same how I was in college a little bit, just with less special teams. But as far as the I formation, that was a little different for me. I haven't been doing that a lot in college. And it was kind of fun, though, because the competition level was raised up a little bit. Everybody was all excited because we had the scouts around. So it was pretty fun, but it was different in terms of me running out of the eye.
Are you one of the kind of running backs that prefer to run out of a lone back, or you kind of like having a lead blocker for you?
Like I said, this is my first time running out of the eye. I enjoyed it a lot. So I'm getting used to this style, and I've already been in a single back system, so I think I'm pretty versatile.
Before we let you go, we kind of want to talk about the interviewing process and the teams that you spoke with during at the combine. Are there any interviews that you thought went extremely well, and that you thought that this looks like a place I might end up being?
Well, I can see myself playing anywhere in the National Football League, and I'll be happy to play for anyone who will have me. I went into extreme detail with the Patriots in my interview. They asked me a lot of questions about my scheme here at Cincinnati, and pass blocking, as well as a few other things, asking about how we block our plays and what was our pass protection responsibilities. So, like I said, I enjoyed the process, and I'm talking to all different teams.
Was that something you were expecting for them to get so in-depth about just the whole scheme overall? Because I think what most players take for granted is that how cerebral the whole NFL process is as for any position. Was that something you had expected, or did it kind of catch you off guard?
No, I was ready for it. I've been told in the past by former players that they would ask us about our offense and what kind of offense we run and how we blocked it and everything. So I was pretty prepared for it.
And just to follow up on that point, because I just came across an article today in the paper, the NFL is just looking into the whole policy in terms of what teams are actually asking. A lot of, borderline questions that were, asked during the interview process up in Indianapolis. And some players encountered that and some players did not. I'm just curious, did you come across any interviews where you just felt like the questions they were asking you were just kind of far out?
Not at all. I thought all the questions they asked were pretty appropriate and very relevant to what we were doing there in the football.
You know what? Because the
okay.
only time you get one of those bad questions is if you've done something bad in the past, and that's the only time they'll bring us news. So if they didn't ask you, that means you've been doing a great job for the past 4 years. You found out how to stay out of trouble. So, congratulations to you for that.
Thank you.
Well, George, man, I want to definitely thank you for calling in. I'm glad to hear that everything at your pro day went well. And, much luck and success to you for this next month. And one last question, what is the next plan now? Have you been called in for any private workouts? And what's going to be your plan for, this next 40 days until the draft?
I haven't been called in for any private workouts yet, but I plan on just working out and stay in shape and be ready for anything that happens.
All right, everybody, this has been George Wynn, Cincinnati standout running back that joined us today. Like I said before, I want to thank you for calling in, man, and keep working hard, and hope to hear your name called on April 25th through the 28th or 27th, but for that matter. So, good luck, man. Take care.
Thanks, George.
All right, everybody, as we keep moving along, this is a fast pace. This is bang, bang. This is like doing Oklahoma drills. We're in and we're out. Right next on the line, we have a dude that I had enjoyed watching his highlights. Remember, this is what I did. So I was looking at the list of name of clients George Lennon had, and he was like, who do you want to interview? So I was clicking through, and I saw Johnny Booty. And I clicked on the defensive end film, and the first thing I saw was, this mean outside speed rush of him chopping and ripping and making plays. I was like, hey, I like this dude already, and I got to talk to him. So I want to thank Johnny Booty from Temple University, DN. Thanks for calling in, man. How you doing?
Friday workout. Hello?
Oh, my phone, man. I didn't even pass you through. I gave you the whole big lead up. And I didn't even pass you through yet. Johnny, welcome to NFL Draft Player Pro Day Recap Show. I'm Aki Jones. We got Rich Serratella here, man. I want to thank you again. I want to thank you for calling in. And tell us, man, like, you know, I thought the film was impressive.
Thank you.
So, you know, what's been the process, you know, after the season ended, and what have you been up to, and then, you know, how was your preparation for your pro day and everything going?
Well, it's been going good. I actually got out of my Friday workout. I'm out here in New Jersey training at Test Football Academy in Martinsville.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, yeah, so just training out here, getting ready for my pro day next week. I had a little all-star game in Texas versus Nation game. I feel like I did a good job showcasing my talent out there throughout the week of practice. Unfortunately, I got hurt, just re-banged my knee in the first quarter of the game, so I didn't really get to show everything.
Hey,
I
John.
Sorry
about that, John. It's Rick Serratella here. I just wanted to touch base on that Texas versus the Nation game because I know you left after the first quarter, but just talk to me a little bit about that week in practice and the competition there. I mean, you're in a good group down at Test Football Academy right now with another good group of athletes, and you guys are kind of all on the same mission there, path to the draft type of deal. But, you know, take me through the week that was at Texas versus Nation there. Were you able to pick up any pointers? And, you know, what was the best piece of advice that you learned throughout the week, whether it was a personal piece of advice or a professional piece of advice?
Well, I really enjoyed my time out there. I felt like it was a good experience, an opportunity for me to showcase my talent on a level with, quote-unquote, the best of the best out there. I felt like I held my own. I got a lot of compliments from scouts that I was watching that I had to deal with the practice. And just I can't think of just one pointer that I learned throughout the week, but I took away a lot of good examples from older guys that was there. As coaches that were there, so I think it was good all around.
Now, I think they played 4-3 in that defense all-star game, correct?
Yes, sir. I played DN 4-3.
So, now, I mean, I think you come in right around 6'4", 250. Now, having played with your hand in the dirt during your college career and kind of projecting as an outside linebacker at the next level, is that kind of what you're envisioning, or, you know, what type of plans do you have, or what do you foresee yourself playing at the next level?
Well, whichever team takes me, I'll be willing to play whatever they want to play me. But at the end of the day, I think it's pretty much the same thing, whether you're playing a 4-3 defensive end or outside linebacker in a 3-4. You're standing on the edge, coming off the edge, making plays, and trying to cause disruption in the backfield. So I think I'll be fine transition if I'm looking at the playing 3-4 defense.
Yeah, and I think a lot of teams now are kind of converting over to that hybrid defense where they play a lot of 3-4, a lot of 4-3. You see the Seahawks doing it. I think the Ravens are going to do more of it this year right here in New Jersey. The Jets did a lot of that. So I think that actually is going to be beneficial to you in your career as you move on to the next level and we see more and more of those type of hybrid kind of offenses. And you know, being a 3-year starter and having good bloodlines, you know, I know your brother is up there in Buffalo with the Bills. I mean, have you been able to kind of get advice from him throughout the whole process?
Yeah, exactly like you said, just moving forward with more teams and moving towards the 3-4 defense, I think it will help a guy like me where my strong point is my athletic ability and my mobility. So I think that's only good. But as far as my brother, yeah, he's helped me greatly throughout the process, just giving me pointers, what to look forward to, what to focus on. Just, you know, it's always good to have somebody that's been there and done it that can help you and guide you throughout the process. I don't think it could ever be a negative of that situation.
Well, tell me a little bit about Temple, because Temple seems to have been improving over the last few years. You know, what's going on at Temple where they're starting to get more and more players of NFL caliber coming down the pipeline? I'll just go out and say I'll give a little bit of credit to my homeboy, Coach Ed Foley over there. He was my coach at Fordham University, so I like to think he had a little bit to do with it.
And now he's your boy, huh?
Yeah, Coach Ed Foley's a great coach, man. He's one of the guys that you have to have the juice and energy to be around him because he don't like guys that drag along. But he just brings a positive energy to the practice field. I feel, you know, just when a program's on a lower scale, it just takes 1 year or just the one, say, for example, with Temple, Muhammad Wilkerson. Once you get a player like that, other upcoming guys see that and like, oh, he went to Temple and I can do that. So now the younger guys like, oh, if he went to Temple and became a first-round draft pick, I can do the same. So the more and more guys see that, the more and more guys want to come there, and more guys come through and reach the NFL. So it's just a process, continuing process, I believe. So I think the Temple's only going to be on the rise for the years to come.
And, you know, just to follow up with that, I'm sorry, Aki, just to follow up with that, the, you know, your Temple career, I mean, talk a little bit for a second, you know, for those who might not be familiar with your whole journey to Temple. I mean, you faced quite the bit of adversity during your career, John. I mean, you know, doctors kind of told you that you'd never play football again, and you kind of defied the odds and got clearance to take us through the journey. I'll let you tell the story in terms of how you landed at Temple.
Well, just like this, we was going to Oklahoma drill one day at practice. I got hit awkwardly in the neck. I had a finger. Went to go see the doctor. The Marshall University, I was at Marshall is where I started my career. The Marshall University doctor didn't like what he's seeing in the MRI, so he said we should get a second, third opinion. Luckily for me, I had the opportunity to where my brother was in the NFL, so he had great connections with upper-class doctors. So I flew to California to see Dr. Robert Watkins, who was considered throughout his class as the top spine doctor in the country. He's the doctor that performed the surgery on Peyton Manning and Dwight Howard. So I was in a fortunate situation to have that background and with those connections. I went there. He said he didn't see any problem with my MRI, my X-ray. No procedures were needed, and so I went. I got another opinion at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, which also regarded as one of the top hospitals throughout the country for what I had, and they seen nothing that will prohibit me from playing football or cause any serious issues at all. So with those two great prestigious opinions, I did transfer to Temple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you haven't had any problems ever since. Everything's been on the up and up, correct?
Yes, sir. Haven't missed a practice or a game since my career at Temple.
Wow, that is kind of impressive. I would have been scared to death with any kind of neck injury. I mean, yeah, that's it. You know, more power to you for going out there and wanting to put your head out there. I mean, I would have been scared to death.
Yeah, man. At first, you're kind of scared, but then when you get opinions from the top-notch, top-of-the-top doctors that perform, like Dr. Robert Watkins, he gives a lot of clearance for numerous NFL players that have any sort of neck injury at all, athletes, different sports. So once I got a clearance from him, I knew there was nothing wrong at all. So now I just go out there and play with no doubt in my head at all. Playing over the last 3 years with no sign of any injury at all or discomfort or anything, so I'm just like it never happened to me.
Well, now that you know that's in your past and you're looking for the future to be in NFL, the pro day is pretty much the first start of it or one of the components of it. So tell me, what are you looking to show as part of your game that you think hasn't been seen by scouts that you kind of want to show that you also have that? Because I know, you know, as a player, you always get boxed in into a kind of category as a defensive lineman. They'll either box you in as either, you know, he's a great run stopper and he's improved his pass game, or he's just a pass rusher who's kind of light in the butt and can't play the run. Or, you know, even if you're a defensive end and you're thinking about and they have you projected possibly outside linebacker, they're going to be kind of concerned about your coverage skills. So what part of your game are you hoping to really display to show that you're a more complete player?
I would say they'll probably classify me as a pass rushing type of player, 250, so I'm just looking forward to my bench press because I think I'll put a top 10 number out of all players at my position in that. So looking forward to that and also my 40.
And, where do you think you're looking at your 40? For you to walk out of there and just have a satisfied day, what do you think you would need in the 40? Or what do you want to do in your 40?
Well, I know for a fact at least at the worst I'll run a 4.6. I'm just gonna give you my worst.
The worst you run is a 4.6.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I mean, you know, looking at you know, some of the top performers in Indianapolis, you know, I think, you know, we had a 4.58, 4.60, 4.63.
Yeah, I've been following up. 4.58, I believe, is the fastest. But he was 2.40, so we'll see about that.
Right.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, since you said you were watching the combine and watching the numbers, did you get a chance to watch positional drills with and hear the commentary from Willie McGinnis?
No, I didn't get to. Because some of the times while I was performing, I was actually in my daily workouts, but I would check out. As soon as I get out of workout, I'll go online, see who did what, or just check out the highlights on NFL.com. So.
Oh, so you was doing this in the middle of your workouts. So you was getting hyped in the middle of your workouts. If you saw a number, you was like, nah, I got to get this. You go back to the field and try to get crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, that's good motivation. I like that, though. That's a good game.
Yeah.
Hey, John, last one from me. You know, you talk about being a pass rush specialist. I was wondering if you could just take me through your kind of pass rush repertoire and, you know, what kind of pass rushing techniques you prefer to use. Are you a bull rusher type of guy? Do you, you know, do you do a down and dip? Do you do a chop move? You know, what kind of ham repertoire, or are you a pass rush kind of guy? You know, just take me through your whole swim moves or what you like to do when you get after the quarterback.
Well, first of all, it all starts with the prior week, watch a film and see what type of guy you're going against. If it's a weight spinner, my favorite move I like to throw is the chop club grip. Get him on the edge and use my speed. A lot of the times I get cheated on my speed move, so I like to transition to a speed to power, which is the first pass rush opportunity of the game. You just go as fast as you can, let them know that you're a guy that has speed, so they start cheating and leaning. Once you get them overset, and then you just hit them with the power, they usually work that opening up. So that's kind of just a minor look at my mindset and my game plan for a given week.
One question I had is, have you talked to any other D linemen or defensive ends who are currently in the NFL to talk about what kind of things will work in the NFL? Because I think one thing guys get kind of caught up in as far as, you know, playing against the pass especially is that, you know, normally when you're a good pass rusher in college, you are pretty much a better athlete than most guys, and you were able to do things that, you know, probably can't translate over to the NFL because those guys are a little bit more athletic, a little bit stronger. Was there any advice that you got, even at the Texas versus the Nation game, what moves that you normally do was like, maybe you need to change that differently or look at it differently because it possibly won't work at the next level?
Yeah, the main thing I just heard was focus in on three moves and just master those moves. It's not more important to have a four list of moves, six, seven, eight moves, and not master. And just all you need is, like, say, for example, Dwight Freeney. He has three moves.
Right.
And he just mastered it to perfection. So that's what I'm just keying in and focusing on right now. And
I think that's
my focus going forward.
I truly believe that's the one thing that gets lost, and you know what? You know, I was always told the same thing. It's like, you know, you need two moves. You need your number one move and your counter move, and you can eat all day off of that.
Yep, that's exactly what I heard down there, and just throughout former players, some simple players in the league. That's what they're saying. So
now, after you have your pro day, is there any plans to join your brother during his off-season workouts, or are you finishing class up at Temple? What's the next move after your pro day?
I graduated in December, so right now just strictly football. After my pro day, I have one team workout with the Eagles set up so far. So,
wow.
As soon as I get out of there, I'm just focusing on that. Hopefully, after my pro day, teams like what they see. I'm hoping they like what they see. So just, I'm going to stay in the Philly area after my pro day for about 3 weeks just in case teams want to work me out on campus and stuff like that. And after that, I'm going to go back to Houston, just hang out until April comes, to the end of April, the draft.
And because you're training at Tess, will you be also joining Tess on their March 29th pro day, or are you just going to focus solely on the Temple pro day?
I'm just focusing solely on the Temple pro day.
All right, cool. Well, everybody, this has been John Yabuti, defensive end out of Temple University. I want to thank you for calling in and talking with us, man. It's been a pleasure. Like I said, I really do hope that because, I've seen the film, and, you know, one thing, being a D-tackle, I kind of jealous of the guys who can do that, you know, that club dip and rip, because I love that move. I just don't have – I didn't have that speed at 300-plus to get to the edge
yeah.
like that. But, I mean, it's just a sweet move, because once you come under him and you got the momentum, it's nothing but either a lights-out blindsided sack to a fumble. Like, that's – there's nothing better than that.
Yeah, when you catch it clean, it's poetry. Beautiful.
Right.
Well, write some more poetry on March 21st, John, and looking forward to it. So, you know, best of luck to you moving forward.
All right, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, man. We'll be in touch to find out how those numbers work, because we want to see if you ran that sub 4.6.
Yes, please check in. check in Thursday. Maybe y'all can get me back on the show after Thursday.
All right, no problem, man. I'll get you and Coach Foley out there. All right, man. Y'all have a good one. Thank you. All right, man. Peace.
And, you know, Aki, you know, what the interesting thing is, he's not the last Yobodi to come through the bloodlines. He's actually got a younger brother over at Southwest Minnesota State. So, you know, they're looking to make it a trifecta in that Yobodi family.
I think that's kind of impressive just to have, like, that many, you know, people from one family playing in the league. I mean, you look at the Trufants who are doing the same thing. It's you know, having one person, you know, it doesn't always say, like, because he's your brother, he'll have the same ability to do so. But, you know, that is, like, kind of impressive to have that many guys possibly be in the league for one family, because it's already, you know, it's pretty much the odds are just extremely low on that happening. So,
and there are teams out there that do believe in strong bloodlines. So, you
mm-hmm.
know, believe it or not, you know, that is one of the factors taken into consideration, you know, throughout the whole scouting process. And there are teams that, you know, they don't live and die by it, but, you know, if a player's neck and neck, it could be a deciding factor. So definitely, if there is a team looking for strong bloodlines, John Yobodi from Temple is definitely it. And like we said, with that, you know, 3-4 type of hybrid coming in and out of the NFL with more teams doing it, I think he's going to make a smooth transition to the next level.
Everybody, what we'll do, I'm definitely going to tweet out his highlight film to you guys. I thought it was impressive. I really did like it. So you guys will get the idea of what I'm talking about. While we're here, we'll just, you know, before we wrap up, we'll just talk about a couple more of the pro days. We had our man Football Rob down in West Virginia at the West Virginia pro day. Of course, the highlight was Geno Smith, the number one ranked quarterback on everyone's board, unless E.J. Manuel decides to go out there and just do something completely stellar. Everybody's still waiting for Matt Barkley's pro day as well to be a judge of that. Another guy, the guy that's been putting around, getting a lot of pub as of late, has been Tavon Austin. He put up impressive numbers at the combine. So, did Football Rob drop you any nuggets of his time down there at in West Virginia?
Well, I do know that. You know, it was a very heavily attended media day, one of the more attended media pro day events during the draft season. So, you know, a lot of the access was restricted to the ESPN and the NFL networks of the world. You know, we did get the scoop that, you know, 28 NFL teams in attendance. There were four teams not in attendance. I know the Arizona Cardinals were one of them. The Seattle Seahawks were not there. Dallas Cowboys and San Francisco 49ers. So, you know, interesting that the Cardinals were not in attendance, because Geno Smith might be their answer at quarterback. You know, the Cardinals picking at number 7. I think, you know, one guy that's kind of not, I don't want to say he's flying under the radar, but, you know, with the hype and the publicity that Geno Smith and Tavon Austin are both receiving, you can state a pretty strong case that those two guys are both top 10 talents in terms of just pure talent in this draft. Those two guys might be two of the 10 best players in the entire draft class. But, you know, Stedman Bailey is a guy I think that is on a lot of teams' radars, could go as high as the second round. And I think he can be a starting wideout at the next level. Maybe not a number one guy, but maybe, you know, that number two complementary type of wideout. We saw what he could do at the combine, you know, had another good day at the pro day. So I think, you know, Stedman Bailey's a guy that should definitely be on your radar.
All right. You know, the thing about, you said, the Cowboys over there in, at the pro day, you know, with them, I think Jerry Jones, you know, to me, it's kind of like, I won't say he's a copycat guy, but he always is, he's going to be with the trends of what's happening in the NFL. And I do think if, you know, and it's very slim chance he has the opportunity to even get anywhere near Geno Smith. I wouldn't be surprised if they would make a move to get him. I would not be surprised because to see the success that's been going. And it's like, to me, it makes sense because there was a couple of things he said before, like what happened with Des Bryant. The story was that they passed on Randy Moss because of some off-the-field issue. And as we all know, Randy Moss, I mean, me personally, is probably one of the best receivers to ever play. I know a lot of people are going to be like, you know, have some words with that, but I personally feel like that guy is just unreal. But this is why he picked Des Bryant, because he said he'll never make that mistake again. And, you know, you're seeing what's happening in your own conference with somebody like RG3 who's just tearing it up. And the shift is moving back to the NFC East in the Redskins. I think he wants that, and it's getting to that point where Tony isn't going to be that guy, so do you start looking, you know, to the future? And they have a pretty solid team so far. They're just missing a few pieces. But, you know, moving some picks around to get a chance to get Geno Smith to be that guy, I would not be surprised.
Well, I mean, you know, listen, I knew Tony Romo was not a winning quarterback in the NFL ever since the botched, you know, that botched extra point field goal, whatever it was, back in the day. So, you know, I felt like, you know, I honestly felt like Kyle Orton was a better quarterback on that team last year, and I believe that John Kitna, we saw when Romo got hurt a couple seasons ago, and John Kitna came into the huddle, and he was a leader. He fired up the team. The players rallied around him. And I don't see that from Tony Romo. And more importantly, when it comes to clutch situations, I see, you know, like the Wicked Witch of the West, you know, he melts. And, you know, I just don't think that, you know, moving forward, you're not going to win playoff games with Tony Romo as your quarterback. And, you know, just check the record and you'll see that history shall repeat itself. So, hey, listen. You know, you never count them out with Jerry Jones calling the shots, but I would be a little bit shocked. I would be a little bit surprised. And, you know, I think they would have to have the ammunition to probably trade up into that top 10. But, you know, if Geno Smith does escape the Cardinals at 7 and, you know, the Buffalo Bills are in that top 10, I think outside of the top 10, if he doesn't get taken there, anything's possible.
Right. Well, we're going to go move from one topic. We're talking about marginal quarterbacks in Texas to speaking about extremely good Heisman-winning quarterbacks over in Texas. But we have one of receivers that Johnny Manziel was utilizing this year on his Heisman run. My brother, I'm not going to go and tank your name from the beginning, so I'm going to let you say this first so I don't have you cursing me out talking about Ike said my name wrong. Please, can you say your name perfectly for us one time? Hello?
I think you guys got the wrong guy.
No, I think this is Brian Brickowski on the line, actually, joining us. Is
sorry,
that Brian?
Brian.
Yes, sir. My name's a little easier to pronounce. I saw the other guy's name. I'm not going to try to pronounce it either.
You know, we kind of strung this show together, you know, this morning. So Brian Brickowski joins us now. And, you know, Aki, I know, you know, this is somebody that I've spoke to you about in the past that's been on my radar ever since I went up to the Waldwick Combine in New Jersey a few weeks back. And, you know, Brian wasn't actually working out. He was actually on hand to lend some support for some of the fellow players working out there. But I got the opportunity to meet Brian there and went back and checked out some film on him and was very impressed with what he did with the Cleveland Gladiators this past season. But, you know, let's welcome Brian into the show. And I know he just recently participated in the Monmouth Pro Day this week. So welcome to the show, Brian, and enlighten us with your Pro Day, because I know you had a big, big-time performance.
Yes, thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. And I remember meeting you at that Warwick Combine and telling you that March 12th was my day and that I needed to show up big. And I was confident in the numbers that I could put up. And I think collectively that they're pretty good. I mean, I think it's right up there with the best of the tight ends and outside linebackers. You want me to go through, like, the numbers?
Well, yeah, I have it here. I mean, I went back and touched base with my Monmouth sources, and, you know, I have you here measured in at 6'4½", 247 pounds. And at that size, you put up some running back-type combine numbers, 4.54 in the 40, 40-inch vertical jump, 10-foot, 11-inch broad jump, 4.06 in the shuttle, to go along with 28 bench press reps. So, you know, I was taken aback, and once I saw those numbers, I said, you know, let's get Brian on the show, because, you know, he had an outstanding season just a year ago, but those were the numbers that I was able to obtain. So, you know, take us through it, Brian, and let us know if we're accurate, and, you know, were you happy with those results? Which drill do you think you could have did a little bit better, and which drill were you really happy with?
That I think that those are all completely accurate, 100%. The drills I was a little unhappy with, I thought I could have got my personal best on bench press was 35 reps, but they were really strict there with the form, and they had me hold the, after each press, they had me hold it up there for about a half a second and come back down. And that changed my momentum in being able to consistently, you know, push out repetitions. And so I'm a little unhappy with the 28 reps. But the one I'm probably most happy with is the vertical. I knew that I could jump 40. My on a previous combine I did, I jumped 38.5, I believe. And I was really shooting for that 40 mark. I was also pretty happy with my 40. I knew I could break 4.6. I'd done it multiple times before in practice runs, and I was glad that I was able to actually use all of my form and training correctly, and didn't crack under the pressure. I was able to get that number down as well, because that's the 40 times one that NFL scouts really harp on as a big indicator of whether or not a player possesses the game speed to compete at the NFL level. So I was happy about that.
Well, Brian, I listen to your numbers. Kind of tell me through what happened with you coming directly out of college. Were these numbers that you put up at this event similar to the ones that you had coming out of college?
See, it's my my college career has been extremely unconventional. I wound up taking a full scholarship to Akron University. I wound up transferring after a year to come closer to home, and also I wanted to be a part of a program that I thought was going to win consistently, whereas I didn't feel that same way about Akron. So I transferred home to Monmouth. I wound up playing for 2 years, but unfortunately I couldn't balance school, social life, and football properly back in the day. And I only wound up playing 2 years there and starting one, and my college career ended prematurely. I actually had 2 years of eligibility left until last January, when I decided to give arena football a run for its money. And actually this past Tuesday was the first time I ever had an opportunity to get in front of any NFL scouts. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty interesting. So what, and have you had any feedback? I mean, I know this is a short turnaround. Has it had any feedback from just those numbers? Because, like, we are going to keep harping on those are impressive numbers. And if you were to put that in any college program, you'll be looking at being, like, ranked as one of the top performers at your position. So, you know, how do you feel about that? And, you know, knowing that you are able to compete, or knowing that you're able to match up with those guys, and where do you think these numbers are going to put you, and what holds for the future? Because I know there's so many opportunities in CFL, indoor, and NFL. You know, what is the next move for you now, and what are you going to do as far as the film part of it? Because I think that's definitely one thing that schools, or scouts, always want to see.
Yeah, that is one thing. I spoke to the Saints and the Jets at the Monmouth Pro Day. One of the Saints scouts said that I was rookie minicamp priority. I don't believe I'm draft eligible anymore because I'm already in the pro circuit with the Arena Football
right.
League. What I plan to do is I'm currently under, I guess, a franchise contract here in Cleveland with the Gladiators. It's a great place out here. They know how to develop guys. There's plenty of guys within the system that have played in the NFL. We have a former New England Patriot, Pierre Woods, who is here. He'll be playing
mm-hmm.
the other defensive. He'll be playing the other defensive end position alongside myself. A couple of our coaches have been in and out of the NFL and have connections with certain front offices and whatnot, and they're all four moving up. So in the meantime, I have a 2-year deal here in Cleveland. But if an NFL opportunity presents itself, there's no way that I could not pass it up. So
absolutely.
And, Brian, it's Rick again. You talked about the unconventional path to the NFL, and like you said, you had to pay your dues and work your way up the ladder, and I think you're still in the process of doing that. But talk a little bit about the grind, first of all, being from a small school in Monmouth, New Jersey, then working your way into the the indoor football league and winning, rookie of the year honors with Lehigh Valley Steelhawks. And then this past year with the Cleveland Gladiators, you played the last 5 games, 6 tackles for a loss, 3.5 sacks, 26 tackles, showed a lot of quick speed moves on the outside, rushing the quarterback. But, just take us through what a grind it's been for you and, trying to shed that small school label and maybe not getting a fair opportunity like some of the other prospects that come out from, a big-time D1 school.
I have absolutely no issue with the grind at all because I love it. I love everything about it. I kind of put myself in the position of having to go through to get to where I want to be because of my past, but I don't regret it at all in any way, shape, or form. It's been a rocky road, it has, but these past 3 years when I've kept my focus down and really strapped up the cleats and got to down the brass tacks and did all about football, it's been great. I don't have any regrets or any problem with the grind. It's because it's making me a better man and a stronger man for it. So I think that's actually an advantage for me as compared to other guys who maybe have an easier path to get to where they're trying to get.
Yeah, and listen, when I spoke to you, I could tell that you were definitely hungry and that you were football 24/7, 365. That was without a doubt. And I heard you earlier mention even, with your size, maybe a little bit of tight end. Is that something that you would consider maybe kind of like a Connor Barwin type of role, tight end / outside linebacker? I mean, with your height, weight, and speed, I would think that's probably another viable option.
Yeah, well, the Saints actually took me aside during the pro day and worked me out specifically as a tight end. We ran routes and did ball drills and whatnot. But, I would love to do that. If I could be on the field every snap of the game, I would be all for that. I'm a guy who has a nonstop motor. I'm always running. I've got tons of energy, and if I could go the whole game and a team would want me to go the whole game, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. That's what I'm going to do.
And are you comfortable with your hands? You feel like you can, stick with the tight end a little bit? Can you catch the ball?
Oh, yeah. I was an all-state tight end in high school.
Okay. Very good.
So,
one thing you're saying, like you're getting the feedback you're getting that you're definitely going to be a priority camp guy. It's going to be a blessing to get there. And, the one thing I've always been told, and I guess you've been told the same thing, the more you can do, the longer you'll stay. So you know, with somebody your size and athletic ability, you can do multiple things out there. You're going to be able to. So make sure, you know, you look to utilize every available opportunity that your size and athletic ability allows you to. Even if they say, hey, can you long snap, you might as well go ahead and do it.
I actually did that at my throw day as well.
There
not.
You go.
So, we need to get you a nickname like the utility man or the superintendent because damn, you're just doing everything.
Hey, anything to get my foot in the door just to get that one
right.
opportunity, I'm willing to do.
Right.
The jack of all trades. hey, listen, Brian, you know, we appreciate you hopping on, and I know you just got out of a practice, so definitely appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule. Congrats on a very impressive pro day performance, and I know we will be in contact soon, my man.
I really appreciate you guys having me on the show. I do.
Is there any Twitter handle, anything like that you want to put out there so people can keep up with you and keep up to date with you?
Yeah, if they would like to, it's BRIK, the word house, and then SKI, so it's a little pun on my name, Brick House Key.
All right, I like that one.
All right.
All right, Brian, take care, and we'll be in touch, and thanks for calling in.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right. Yeah, that's, you know, Brian, like I said, a key, he's been on my radar. And, you know, don't be afraid to throw on a little Cleveland Gladiators film. You might like what you see.
I'm definitely going to go check it out. When I heard those numbers and I wanted to go check out his size, I was like, that's kind of crazy. So I'm that's like Sean Merriman-esque. So I said, yeah, let me take a look at this guy and see what he's doing. Because if, you know, he's getting that kind of look from NFL teams and they're pulling him aside even extra work, you know, that always speaks volumes. And, you know, before we get out of here, I want to ask you, how busy are you going to be after this weekend? Now their free agency is getting ready to come to an end. You have your draft boards and everything. You're always busy tinkering with the draft board and everything. And mock drafts are going to all change now because of this free agency.
Yes.
Is there any big moves that you're looking at where you think it's going to affect anything in the top 10? We'll just start with the top 10. Do you think any free agent acquisitions are going to make any changes to many boards in the top 10?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're here in the free agent frenzy day number 4, and it's definitely getting a little bit crazy. I think the interesting thing is the quarterback carousel. You know, you talk about Matt Castle hopping on with the Vikings, but now you're hearing Kevin Cobb's going to be released. Carson Palmer's probably going to be released from the Oakland Raiders. You talk about Matt Flynn is possibly on the trade market. And then, you know, you talk about Cleveland Browns exploring trade possibilities for Ryan Mallett. So I think going back to the whole Geno Smith conversation, it gets a little bit interesting when you talk about those two teams inside the top 10 that need a quarterback, the Arizona Cardinals and the Buffalo Bills. They're going to have to weigh, you know, the positives and negatives in terms of rolling the dice with the rookie quarterback or maybe taking a shot on a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick or Kevin Cobb or Carson Palmer or Matt Flynn or Ryan Mallett. So I think, you know, the quarterback situation inside the top 10 is definitely still remains murky. And I think, you know, if Geno Smith falls out of that top 10, I think there's a trickle-down effect to Matt Barkley, who could actually slide out of the first round altogether.
Right, and it's still, like we were talking earlier, it's still not even out that, you know, Matt Barkley will be the second quarterback taken because the buzz has been a lot about E.J. Manuel. I think he's impressing people every day. They speak to him just personality-wise, his football intelligence, it's definitely his skill. And this spread offense is going to hurt a lot of drop back quarterbacks a lot because the things we heard about Matt Barkley is always about his arm and does he have the NFL type arm and everything. At this juncture with the quarterback, if he doesn't have the elite arm, he should at least have elite or somewhat elite legs to be able to get out of the pocket. And I think that's going to start speaking more as, you know, this draft goes along.
Well, you know, the NFL has and always will be a what have you done for me now
right.
lately type of league. And, you know, you talk about Matt Barkley. He was injured for the bowl game, you know, skipped the Senior Bowl, bypassed the combine, you know, made USC push back their pro day date just so, you know, he can get an extra weekend to get everything together. So, you know, he's really going to have a good, strong pro day to solidify his draft stock. And, you know, you talk about the Buffalo Bills. If they do bypass Geno Smith in the first round, it wouldn't surprise me if they come back in round two and, you know, all quarterbacks being equal. I know there's a lot of talk
right.
about Ryan Nassib and the connection to Doug Marrone, but all things being equal, if you come back around at the top of the second round with the Buffalo Bills on the board and Matt Barkley, Ryan Nassib, and E.J. Manuel are still all on the board, I wouldn't be surprised if E.J. Manuel is the second quarterback off the board.
And one thing, I know that everybody here, let's talk, this is a real quarterback-heavy discussion, I guess, because this year, is the thing about the quarterbacks as opposed to last year is that there really isn't a clear-cut, just exciting standout quarterback out of this whole group, even Geno Smith, for that matter. They see him as a good quarterback, but he's kind of being forced to be the number one because there isn't really – he's like the best out of a decent group as opposed to last year where you had the two top players both being quarterbacks. So that's why this gets real quarterback heavy. But, you know, one thing I think that's getting overlooked in all this talk is that a couple of teams that are looking for quarterbacks are pretty much they have a lot more problems than their quarterbacks. So getting one of these guys who we keep saying they're not going to be the top quarterbacks. They're not looked at as like the best quarterback prospect in years. They're not pretty much going to help a team unless they get the pieces around them, especially the guys in front of them. So a lot of this talk and speculation could be all for naught because these guys just could be complete flameouts. Because going to the Cardinals, who wants to go there as a quarterback? Everybody they brought in has been hurt. I mean,
Gerald.
God bless that man. So like Larry Fitzgerald is probably one of the strongest willed black men in this planet. Like to deal with what he's going through, knowing that you're probably one of the best receivers in the NFL, and they keep putting guys around you.
He even kept Max Hall in the league for a couple
right.
of weeks.
I don't know how he's doing it. Now he's going out there to help. You know it's bad when Larry Fitzgerald is calling up Jamarcus Russell and saying, hey, I'm going to come out there to help you at your pro day. Because he's like, listen, because he wants them to even take a look at Jamarcus Russell. That's how bad the situation is getting out there. So this is got to understand what people are going into if they go to Arizona.
Yeah, it's definitely a dire need, and it's getting dire in the desert. But, you know, going back on the point that you just made, you know, in terms of reconstructing a team, if I'm in a rebuilding phase, the type of process, if I'm an NFL organization, I always believe firmly that you build from the inside out. And if you don't
exactly.
have the building blocks to solidify both your offense and defensive line, then you might not even bother with the quarterback because you throw that
exactly.
quarterback behind the shoddy offensive line. There's been plenty of examples in the past. You throw a rookie quarterback behind a bad offensive line, you're going to shatter his confidence. You're going to take the learning curve back a couple of steps. And, you know, at that point, you almost take two steps backwards to take a step forward. So I agree
mm-hmm.
with what your original assessment was. A lot of these teams that need quarterbacks have a whole lot bigger type of problems, and a lot of those problems reside up front with the big uglies.
Well, everybody, hey, I want to thank you guys for all checking us out on the NFL Draft Bible Pro Day Recap. Just to go over a couple of the guests, we had George Wynn, Cincinnati running back, call in. We had Donya Booty call in, DN out of Temple, and we had Brian Burkowski of the Cleveland what was the name of his team again?
Gladiators via Monmouth University. He was also Rookie of the Year with the Lehigh Valley Steelhawks in the Indoor Football League.
All right, everybody. And also stay tuned for some of the videos we have coming out You can catch our videos being tweeted out on our NFL Draft Bible Twitter page, or you can check our YouTube page, which is Rick.
You know, just follow us on Twitter at NFL Draft Bible. You know, the whole social media game is getting a little bit crazy with this account, Facebook account, Twitter account, YouTube account. Just, you know, everything we do will be on Twitter. So follow us there at NFL Draft Bible. And as we speak right now, we are now 41 days and 5 hours exactly to the second right now to the 2016 NFL Draft.
And don't worry, everybody, we have a nice treat coming up for you. We do have a new website that will be up for NFLDraftBible.com popping up very, very, very soon. So you'll have all this information. All this information is going to be a one accessible page. If you like it, send me a message because yours truly had a little bit to do with it. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate you checking us out at the NFL Draft Bible Player Spotlight Show / Pro Day Recap Show, where we always, always bring you the names you need to know.
Now, flavor.